This morning we're interviewing Debbie Young, a poet, a playwright, and an actor. She's of Jamaican descent. Yeah. Debbie is a poet, a playwright, an actor, and has performed in Toronto. She's currently working in Cuba, mm-hmm. and is in the process of developing a play on Assata Shakur's life. Would you be able to tell listening audience a little bit more about who Assata Shakur is? Mm-hmm. And her significance in the history of Black Power movements.
Assata Shakur was one of the prominent Black Panthers who went to prison, was charged with numerous charges by the U.S. government, who spent an extended time in prison after her last charge, which was, I believe, a charge of murder or manslaughter or something having to do with a homicide. She was in prison for a couple of years, and then she escaped from prison, and she went to Cuba and was accepted by the Cuban government, and she's been living in Cuba for over 20 years. And she played a phenomenal role in the civil rights movement in terms of being a Black woman, in terms of being a radical Black woman, in terms of being someone who believed in the politics that the civil rights movement was fighting for and believed in it so much that she was willing to risk her life. That kind of risk and that kind of dedication to social change and dedication to life and family and earth and people, I believe, is something that runs deep within the veins of Black women. As a young Black radical feminist queer woman myself, Assata's story spoke to me and continues to speak to me. When I decided to go to Cuba, I specifically had her in mind. Wasn't quite sure how I was gonna link up with her. After reading her autobiography, I had the idea to write a piece that was gonna look at specifically Black women within the prison industrial complex. There's much information, resources, talk, attention paid to Black men within the prison industrial complex and the way systemic racism affects them in terms of the justice system. There's not as much information, the same kind of information about Black women, and I believe that that's a result of the same result of the patriarchy, same result of the focusing attention on the plight of men. I think that's necessary, don't get me wrong, but it's imbalanced, and having women, particularly Black women, be the brunt of society, be the ones to carry the load, be the ones to sort of suffer quietly in pain. So I got the idea to write the piece on women within the prison industrial complex, wanting to draw a parallel between the kind of solitude and the kind of alienation that happens in prison, drawing a parallel between that and the kind of solitude and alienation that happens to Black women within society in terms of not being included in important things that create and determine the way society is viewed, such as beauty issues, such as being paid for your labor, such as just being appreciated, period, being considered woman. I feel and have felt in the past neglected, not validated, ignored, unappreciated, unloved mm-hmm. by the society I live in. And so most of my work focuses on the exposing of that and the healing of that. The healing is absolutely necessary because you can't expose things and then just leave it up in the air and not heal. Coming back to this piece, I wanted to write a piece that wasn't only going to use the story of Assata Shakur, because I think there are two things with that. One, it makes it easier for people to look at it and dismiss it as, oh, this is a story about Assata Shakur and her time in prison. So what I'm doing is I'm being inspired by Assata's story in prison. It's a very specific one, a very real one, and one that we can identify with because we know of her. However, the piece is broad enough to include those of us who have not gone through solitary confinement, who have not been in prison, but who suffer nonetheless from a kind of solitary confinement within society. And so I want the piece to walk that line where people can see it and identify with it, as well as knowing that it's coming from a very specific elder within our community. I was at a party where her mutual friends were, so, you know, nobody was like, Asada Shakur, you know, she's been living there. This is her family. These are people. And then a couple minutes after I went over to her and started talking to her, I, you know, immediately went to the subject matter at hand. Hi, my name is Debbie Young. I'm a playwright, and I'd like to write a piece inspired by your story. And would you help me? And I'm going to be in Cuba long enough to do that. And she was so receptive. She was like, why do you want to write a piece like that? That's the first thing she asked me. Why do you want to write a piece like that? You know, and I'm a mixture of being nervous and excited, and I was fumbling over my words, but she allowed me to, you know. She was just, okay, telling her about the books I've read, telling her about Angela Davis's books that I've read that I'm using as part of the research, telling her about her book and just my experiences with that. I guess all of that was a humbling moment, because I found her to be very humble. And that humbled me, because it's like, wow, yeah, you're like, you are a revolutionary. When I go back, I need to give her a draft of the piece to look it over and tell me where she feels it needs work, that kind of thing. There's a huge conference on the prison industrial complex that's happening at the end of March that she's invited me to perform an excerpt of Solitary. That's the name of the piece. I don't want it to be a fictional historical piece or historical fictional piece. I don't want it to be tracing Asata's life at all, because anybody can do that, and that's fine for people who are interested in, you know, writing biographies and documenting that. I want it to be a homage to Asata's experiences, as well as the discovery of the experience of solitary confinement. So it's going to be very, very specific in that it's a one character piece. Very specific in that it is one woman character representing Asata and other women in prison, and also women who experience that alienation outside of prison. But one woman within the confines of a prison, whether prison being prison, the actual bars and guards, or prison being the mind, or prison being the society. So the piece is very specific. Like, I'm looking at the stage right now and I see a prison box that represents just a square confining the alienation and one character within that. And that's where all the story will come from, this one woman character, whether or not she's taking on different masks, different faces. That's how I see it evolving. So I really want to stay away from the pseudo-documentation of the civil rights struggle, for example. And I really want to stay away from the pseudo, and I say pseudo-documentation because it's theater, and I feel unless I go all the way out and say this is a piece of history being put out to you. For example, Riot. Riot was, I don't know if you guys remember Riot, that Andrew Moody play. I really enjoyed that piece. For example, the techniques that Andrew used in that piece was using a part of history, the Rodney King beating, and having fictional characters respond to that. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to use the civil rights movement and then sort of put Asada within that. I want to talk more generally about the prison industrial complex, more generally about alienation, and then have her as an elder and as someone who's gone through that influence and even read my draft and, well, I don't think you're presenting this as clearly, that kind of thing. So the role that I want her to play would look more like a dramaturge in theater. A dramaturge, but I mean...
And what is a dramaturge?
Just someone who helps to flesh out the script. Mm-hmm. So you come with a script, it's raw, it's new, it's good, but there are places that it can be stronger. So the dramaturge, it's almost like an editor in writing, mm-hmm. but for theater. The dramaturge looks at it, no, this character needs more development. Why is she doing that? The dramaturge asks the questions, the important questions of the playwright. With the kind of personal information that Asada has, I think that she'd be like the perfect person to play that kind of role with this script. You know, what is it that you want to say to people about Black women in the prison industrial complex? That's a question that I hear her ask repeatedly in my mind's eye that will then force me to become more specific.
Does Asata's experience in the prison complex, does it mirror what is now happening in the prison complex, or is it quite different now with the commercialization now of prisons? How is that experience the same or different?
I think that in some ways it mirrors it and in others it doesn't, right? In terms of the degree to which the prison industrial complex has taken hold, that is definitely worse. Definitely worse, because like you said, the prison industrial complex, and for those who are listening who are wanting to know what this prison industrial complex is, if I could break it down, prison as a business, prison as something that you can profit from, prison that's set up by private corporations. They make their business by having clients. Clients are people who are criminalized. This becomes a complex when we develop an ecosystem based on the criminalization of people to make money. And those people who are being predominantly criminalized are people of color, and Black people are women, are Black women. Our Black men are poor peoples, are peoples who don't have access to resources, whether they be Black, white, of color, First Nations. The prison industrial complex is a system based on the criminal marketing of people's bodies. It's slavery. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It has gotten worse. Because now we're looking at imperialism, American imperialism. We're looking at globalization in quotation, because that's just like a big fancy political science word for slavery and imperialism, continued raping of people and people's land and culture. We are seeing like young Black people not in high school, not in colleges, not in universities. The number that I don't know specific quotes, you know, but when I get back from Cuba, I will about the number of Black people in prison right now. Say the similar felonies committed by white people are not, the justice system does not treat them the same. The justice system is not as harsh on them, particularly for Black women who are caught in cycles of violence, who then have to defend themselves, who have to commit murder in self-defense, and murder in quotations, who have to lash out against the violent, patriarchal, white, dominant society, who are then incarcerated for defending themselves. This is a prison industrial complex. And it has gotten worse, because we're seeing right now a backlash against radical feminism. We're seeing a backlash against people who are working on the ground for social change, grassroots movements. We're seeing complete co-optation of movements that are trying to make change. For example, we've seen a whole slew of new Gap commercial ads that have marketed itself to the popular urban Black musical artists. For example, Erykah Badu and her sister have done Gap ads. India Ari, who I believe presented such an alternative image, an option for black women, has done a Gap ad. Most Def has done a Gap and Sprite ad. Wyclef Jean, Pepsi ad. This just makes me really sad. I mean, I'm going off on a tangent, but it's all linked. It's all linked. Because with the growing commercialization and with the expansion of imperialism and with, like, the development of the American empire, similarly the way England and slavery worked with the development of the English empire and other empires, we're seeing that cycle again. You know, different people or the descendants of the same people in America and in other parts of the world developing their empire. And developing your empire means that if poor people's clothing is, if a lot of people are like discovering and realizing they don't need to buy new clothes, and you're getting people wearing ripped jeans and baggy clothes because it's hand-me-downs, or it means that Gap is then going to buy that idea, and then you can go buy a t-shirt for $80 that has a rip in the middle of it, that has little patchy holes, that's like, you know, developed specifically to be marketed. And it means that they're going to pay people 3 cents a minute in sweatshops all over the world, people of color particularly, to make their clothes. It's all a part of, I believe, this complex, this imperialism. The prison industrial complex is a part of that, sadly. And there's not many people talking about the implication of black women within that. As well, in the piece I mentioned earlier, the violence and cycles of violence that women are caught in, that then it makes it easy for the justice system to sort of throw them in prison and make them a part of the complex. That's a part of what I'm focusing on. So it has changed. It has gotten worse, I believe. Today, the difference with Asata's time period, with that civil rights movement time period and today, is that I have not seen a mass movement headed by black people happening today. Right? I'm a 24-year-old woman, and I know that there are those among us who are fighting. Because I feel that makes up my crew or my peoples, my family. However, I'm not seeing like a mass unified movement, one that has strong solidarity, and one that's able to like really critically analyze the system that's going on. When you get people who are like superstars and who singers, artists, griots, who have a responsibility to community to keep the shit real, and they're doing Gap ads, we're in a sad state. Like, do they not know what Gap is doing? And I know there are those among us who are listening to me who are like, so what if they do a Gap ad? The implications of that, the implications of a corporation like the Gap that legally uses slavery. We ask ourselves, how did slavery happen back in the day? This is exactly how slavery happened. Because we just turn a blind eye and we're like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. You know what I'm saying? When they used to transport images of black women in chains to England to show the English people, they would justify it. Oh, it's not that bad. These people, you know, they're really animals that we just, you know what I'm saying? Is that how we feel about the people in sweatshops? Do we feel that their blood doesn't matter? You know, is that why we turn a blind eye? Is that why it's easy for us to take our $20 and our $30 to go buy a Gap t-shirt? And I'm on Gap because they're the most visible right now, but please, this includes Jacob and all the other places that we give our money to. You know, we justify it by turning a blind eye to it. While there was a political movement, the civil rights movement, that gave people like the Move 9 and that gave the Panthers, they were struggling for something. They were passionate about life, passionate about survival. It was urgent. Right now, we have bought into, we have so bought into this liberal trend of everything's all good and this is mosaic and everybody's living together, and if you just pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you know, you can make it, and everybody just needs to work. It's an individual thing. Like, we bought into this idea, this like Western idea of individualism, and we've forgotten community, we've forgotten family, we've forgotten collectivism, we've forgotten that each of us is responsible and accountable, especially as artists. And I'm talking to artists because I am an artist, you know, and I need to be accountable to myself, and I need to be accountable to humanity. How can I not be then? How can I talk about collectivism and living and life? It makes no sense to me, right? And I'm learning, right? I have a bag of contradictions, but I mean, there's always foundation. Like, there's got to be a place where you're like, no, you either begin or end here, you know? I'm not seeing that accountability in the mainstream. It's sad. And I'm not seeing, like, I'm not seeing people recognize the sense of urgency that exists right now. We are in a state of emergency, people. Like, you know what I'm saying? The American empire is going around just bombing people indiscriminately. And they have been doing that. That's nothing new. So we can't even capitalize on this whole Bin Laden charade. They have been doing that. I don't know where our sense of urgency is. I don't know how it is that we're so comfortable. I'm not sure. As a black woman, as a radical woman, as a feminist woman, as a queer woman, man, the sense of urgency is on my tail. You know what I'm saying? I can't move without feeling the heat, and I celebrate that. You know, that's something that I welcome and celebrate because it makes my life worth living. My multiple identities make my life worth living. But going back to the prison industrial complex and how it has grown and changed, we are definitely in a state of emergency today. You know, whether or not it's more or less, I think it's more, but a state of emergency is a state of emergency. And hopefully this piece, because I work through theater, I'm an artist, I don't necessarily go out there and demonstrate. I use my words, my tools are my body and my words and my voice. Hopefully this piece can ignite that. This is why it's so important for me to not allow the piece to remain in that historical place, because it has to be applicable to today. It has to be like you should be able to see it and get stuff from it that's usable today, and not just put it away, file it away on a shelf, and this is a piece on the civil rights movement, on an Assata Shakur. It has to be present. And that's why I want to stay away from writing a historical documentation of the civil rights movement. We need to deal with the urgencies of what's happening today. But I realize that I don't have to reinvent the wheel. There have been struggles that have happened before me. Their foremothers have things to pass down. I know that I have things to learn from this woman that are applicable to today. You know, how did she feel at 24 fighting the way she was fighting with such urgency, with such commitment? I want to reason with her about that. You know, her sense of urgency. How did she deal with her sense of urgency on a day-to-day basis? These are the questions I have for her, which will, I believe, ultimately be funneled through the piece.
We're speaking with Debbie Young, and she's going to be performing a piece. Debbie Young, here she is.
It's called Blood. I remember when my granny used to say, pick name mine, you stand the bed. At 22, I said to my lover, Rafi, I stay in the bed. Oh, the sheets are red. The sheets are red. You ever notice when you see them on TV, Kotex, Tampax, always are maxi? Them no use red, the blue them use instead. And I'm wondering from where the shame around my cunt came, like a covert operation. More than half the population bleeds. Living in a time where the blood is marketable, like the rest of my body, everything is sellable. Toxic shock syndrome by Procter & Gamble. Chlorine bleach pad designed to suck blood I don't have. 80 different non-choices. Waiting on a shelf. None having anything to do with myself. I bleed 'cause I'm a warrior. Amazon daughter of Yemaya. I bleed because the life of the moon and the sun, the earth, the wind, the rain makes me beautiful black bush woman. We used to have enough blood rituals where women come together and bleeding at the land, but now the blood nah flow. Where did the rituals go? Manufactured shame designed to keep me in chains. Why we teach our little girls to hide the fact that they bleed once a month and it's a setback. Don't talk about it too loud in public. Be careful not to get blood on the toilet. Be careful not to get blood on the sheets. Be careful not to get blood on your skirt. Me no know why, me no know why. For 13 years of my life, I walked around feeling demonized. And when she come to me once every month, she bring enough pain in her cipher. No doc, me no wanna Tylenol, no Midol, no Advil. Just give me raspberry leaf and I'll be tranquil. Right now the universe is communicating. I'm celebrating, surrendering myself to the goddess within. One day my lover turned and said to me, Debbie, can I taste your blood? He said, I need to honor you by drinking of your blood. 'Cause you bleed, 'cause you're a warrior. Amazon daughter of Yemaya. You bleed because the blood of the moon and the sun, the earth, the wind, the rain makes you beautiful black bush woman. No blood, no life. No blood, no life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, is there a chance that your play will be aired here in Toronto?
Yeah, definitely. When I finish, I'm getting back here in May, and I work with Be Current, which is a grassroots theater company founded by Ajizina Mandiela, who's like a veteran dub artist, Jamaican-Canadian, who is also like my mentor is not a large enough word to encompass the relationship that I have with Audrey. She has taught and is teaching me so much. And in many ways, I feel as if I'm her apprentice. I'm going through an apprenticeship, going through a coming of age with her. So when I get back, I'm going to take the play to Audrey, and then we're going to take it from there.
Okay. And for those who travel to Cuba often, in Havana particularly, is there a time when they can, if they're in the country, can they see the play?
Well, we will. Hopefully, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. When I get back, I gotta continue to arrange it. But hopefully, there'll be an excerpt of it in the conference that's happening from the 28th to the 30th, I believe, of March. It's definitely at the end of March. If it's not the 28th, it's the 26th. And so I'm gonna do an excerpt of it there, that conference on the prison industrial complex. And outside of that, right now, I don't have any other plans to produce the play in Cuba, because what I'd really like to do is finish it, take it back here, and then take it through another dramaturgy process here, and then put it up here, and then take it back to Cuba, you see, instead of producing it first in Cuba, because there are resources that I don't have available to me in Cuba that I have here that I'd like to take the piece through.
We've been just speaking with Debbie Young, who is a poet,
playwright, an actor, and watch for her work.